Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Main Street Universe, the flagship show of our network, Main Street Universe, the network. I am the host for at the beginning of our show here, Kevin Baird. Daniel Michael, our producer and president of the network, is detained. He plans to be here as soon as possible, but I appreciate the opportunity to come in and sort of like be reconnected. And, you know, our message here at Main Street Universe is inviting people to sort of ask themselves when they're looking in the mirror, what is it that I'm doing now that I'm living life beyond the corporate cube? I'm back on the main street. I'm walking on the sidewalk, looking at what's going on, who's doing what? What were they doing? What are they doing now? Kind of stuff. We here at Main Street Universe bring guests and friends on to interview them, to talk about life that exists beyond the corporate cube, and that it is possible to have a life that isn't connected to our corporate cubicle or someplace hidden away from the windows that make it possible to look outside and everything. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring on our guest, Michael Starsheen, and he's of the Fellowship of Isis. I'm going to go ahead and bring him on here. Hello, Michael. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing good. I'm doing fine. How are you today?
Good. And again, I'm Kevin Baird, and I'm sort of like the co-producer and co-creator of Main Street Universe. And if you give me just a second here, Michael, I'm going to bring on our other co-host Brett Hillman. Hello, Brett. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right. So say hello to Michael Starsheen. Michael, Brett. Brett, Michael.
Hi, Brett. Glad to meet you.
Glad to have you here.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, Michael, if you could, tell me a little bit about the Fellowship of Isis.
Well, the Fellowship of Isis is a group that dedicates awakening the female spirit, female side of deity, to bringing that sense of the feminine back into reality. And basically everybody that belongs to the fellowship agrees that that's part of their spiritual path that they want to follow. It's a very inclusive organization. It's not an exclusive organization. Anybody can join, whatever their background, whatever their religion, they're welcome to be part of the fellowship. And I think it's important to realize that we are a large organization in the sense that people come to us from very different backgrounds, and everybody is welcome. Is that what you had in mind?
Yes.
As a starting point.
And how did
point?
You? Yeah. How did you get started? How did it get started? What was the genesis?
Well, the original group got started back in the 70s. Three people over in Ireland: Lady Olivia Robertson and her brother Lord Lawrence Durden Robinson, and Lawrence's wife Pamela Durden Robinson. Founded the group basically to, you know, bring the feminine back into reality in terms of deity, and to work as a counter to some of the patriarchal religions that have been so prevalent for the last few thousand years. The organization has grown from that seed that they started to being, you know, a worldwide organization. We have people in countries throughout the world who are part of our organization, all basically because they believe in what we're trying to do. And there's no membership fee. There's no, you know, collection. It's not like a religion where you go to a church every day. It's more of a internal spirituality and spiritual growth that one goes through as part of the organization, although there are groups within it.
Are there any books or anything that have been written, or are there blogs that people can check out?
Oh, yeah, there are books. The Lady Olivia has written her autobiography. We have a main site that you can find by Googling Circle of Isis that has all of the liturgy and has a lot of background information about the fellowship and includes pictures of the castle over in Ireland where Lady Olivia and her brother have set up their temple. I have a blog. It's the blogger on Google as isisofthestars.blogspot.com. There are many other people that write and put out information about the fellowship. As I said, it's a very inclusive organization. Everybody is an equal peer and able to say what they need to say.
So is there a weekly, or is there like a gathering place or something to where people just come in and have like a chat room and they get
caught
up?
We have a couple of Facebook groups that people are part of, and they're fairly active. And then a lot of us communicate with each other by email and by phone. And then once a year there's a convocation at Isis Oasis in Geyserville, California. That's coming up Veterans Day weekend. And the weekend before that, there's a goddess festival in Chicago that is going to happen on the 8th of the month, or not the 8th of the month. Let me look here. It'll be happening on the 5th of October. And those are places where a lot of people come together to gather and do ritual together and visit with one another and get to see each other. I'm going to be at both the Goddess Festival in Chicago and at the one at Isis Oasis this year. And I'm looking forward to it because I'll get to see people that normally I just get talked to on the phone.
Now, are there people who sort of dress up in garb, if you will, regalia?
Yeah. A lot of us like to do that. And we have one lady, Helen McCrae, who goes over to Egypt and has garb and various other things made over there. She brings them back to sell at Isis Oasis at the convocation. So a lot of the stuff we get to wear is actually made in Egypt and is very, very fine work.
Well, sounds nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And it's a nice change from, you know, just running around in your regular business clothes or your T-shirts and jeans and things like that. It makes you feel more special and more connected to the group.
Now, are they working on anything that's doing anything to help sort of power the new age that's developing over in Egypt? Like, you know, what they're trying
very
to go
much,
through a minimum. Yeah, go ahead.
We're doing a lot of prayer work and other work to try to empower the group over in Egypt to become more stable and more tuned into the new age. We also do a lot of environmental work. A lot of our people are devoted to working to improve the environment and see that things turn out better than they have in the past. So that would, you know, in a way that includes making sure countries like Egypt stabilize and manage to come to a better place than they were before.
Now, do you think that Destiny has sort of planned for this transition, if you will, that's going on in Egypt? Like, we know that the Sphinxes and the pyramids and the other landmarks that are there are way older than our archaeologists have.
Oh yeah.
Done the summation or and
yeah, our archaeologists are a little bit headblind.
Yeah. So it's an age that is sort of like in the cycle, like, if you will, solar flares. Like right now we're at a low sunspot activity on the sun, and we have a lot of planetary things that are happening, and also we have these large institutions like the IRS, the FBI are all getting in trouble because things are being let out, and the Snowden thing and all that. Is this sort of,
because we need to have more openness in what our country and what other countries are doing. I mean, let's face it, the security state that tries to hide everything from the people that it governs is not a real intelligent way to run things. That's part of why Mubarak got into such trouble in Egypt.
Right. Yeah, so it is sort of like an evolution. So it's like someone opened up a can of or poured some extra gas into the machine, and that now it's revving its engine. It's getting ready to launch from the starting line. And that sort of is like sending a wave around the planet, like, if you will, a shock wave that carries over and over and over again.
And it causes a lot of different vibrations as it impacts different people. And there are people who are genuinely afraid of that vibration because it scares them to change. We see a lot of that as well. A lot of the resistance to the wave is people who are frightened of the idea of change.
And with our latest guy that was in, D.C., the shooter at the Navy Yard, said that he was hearing voices that were berating him about this thing or that thing.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate thing is our country does not have a good grasp of taking care of people with mental health needs. And we don't do a good job of helping the people, before they get out of control and take a gun and shoot people up. Obviously someone who's hearing voices like that needs to be taken care of.
Right. Absolutely. But I was thinking also along the lines, I'm not sure if you follow mediumship or psychic ability or anything like that, but there are some mediums out there who are able to get messages from people who have passed away, right?
Yeah.
But then there is also the engineers out there who come up with fantastic ideas off the top of their head.
Yeah, and that's usually something speaking to them or giving them an idea that comes from, deity, I would guess, inspiring them or life.
So then Isis, in a sense, could be a channel for good as well.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I mean, she is the mother goddess and the goddess who is devoted to making the world a better place. In fact, one of the big reasons that the original Catholic Church turned on paganism so much was that the cult of Isis was a very, very strong competitor to them at the time. And they had to do everything they could to destroy the idea of feminine deity in order to put the cult of Isis down so that they didn't have that competition. But Isis was there doing good work at the time and was greatly loved and valued back in that period as well. We're just resurrecting that sense of love and care for the world.
Right. Absolutely. And that people are becoming more open-minded now because mm-hmm. the old dogmas and institutions that were out there are really more self-centered and not being, you know, having a goal for the people. Even though,
well, a lot of times what they've become is a way of controlling people to extract money from them. And any incidental good that they do is incidental.
Mm-hmm.
They've become about the money and not about the work.
Yeah, the
and
last
we see
I
that.
Heard.
Hmm?
Right. The last I heard, it was a $17 billion a year industry with all the things that they do.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, I see that our producer is on the line here, Daniel Michael. Hi, hello, how are you? We got Michael Starsheen on the line. And also Brett's here, too.
Oh, are we on the air now?
Yeah.
We are.
We are
okay,
indeed.
Welcome. Or welcome me. I'm not sure. I was just in traffic for about 3.5 hours from
okay.
a destination that usually takes about an hour and a tiny bit of change. So.
No fun whatsoever.
Five. If you don't know the Virginia, it's basically...
You can't get anywhere in 10 minutes.
Everything's close, but takes forever to get there.
Hello, that's the motto. Everything is close, but takes forever to get there.
You know it's a high-traffic area when you're on it and you're like, wow, finally. You feel the breeze going through your hair. Not that I have any hair, but... And you're like, wow, I'm really opening up now. And all of a sudden, you're going like 30 miles an hour. or less. Anyway, enough about that.
I was going to ask before Daniel came back. I'm glad to see you, Daniel. Glad that you're here. You mentioned though that you know the church and you know paganism through competition ended up going back and forth in a lot of more combative type sense. However, the feminine really couldn't even be suppressed in that way. It survived through, I would say, Mary, some of the female saints who are quite possibly goddesses themselves.
Right.
Just
well, the iconography of Mary, if you look at it carefully, is exactly the same as the iconography of Isis. Basically, Mary just became absorbed and became what Isis was. That's basically what happened in the history of the church. Now, this is not to say that the Fellowship of Isis is a pagan organization. It's not. It's inclusive. We have people who are Christian, who are Buddhist, who are Jewish, who are Islam. We have people who are pagan who are part of the group. It's open to anybody that wants to be a part of it, which is, to me, what makes it very much different than most other religions.
Thank you very much.
Janice White here. How are you doing, Michael?
Hey, Janice. Doing great.
Good. I don't know how the conversation started, except for we came in with the accused shooter of the Navy Yard.
Yeah.
And I see ISIS... because I feel that I'm a daughter of ISIS, as very much a healer, that one could go to ISIS. Even this individual, this gentleman that was so troubled, could have went to ISIS and asked her to take away these voices he was hearing or supposedly hearing and to heal him, because she's very much a healer. I also know that firsthand, too. And very much a mother figure, maybe
yes.
not the mother of Egypt, but very much a central figure and a
mm-hmm.
very much generous and healing type of goddess that could heal his wounds or
right.
somebody else's wounds.
Well, and Isis works through not only the spiritual aspects of things, but encouraging us to take care of things on the physical plane. Because we are incarnated in a physical body. We are
mm-hmm.
here to experience living in the physical body, and that does require that we also take care of ourselves here.
Right.
So it's a combination of both, I think.
Yes. But when somebody is so mentally ill that he found it necessary to go to a very highly secured place and start shooting.
Yeah, that was a horrible thing.
Yes. Yes, it very much was.
And you're right that it could be that working with ISIS might have helped him to keep from the rage building up that required him to go and do that.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's interesting to speculate what could be done in a situation like that to keep it from happening, and
again,
what sort of context might help someone not do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, because I know that Brent had asked something about Mary, but in my opinion, ISIS came before Mary. So Mary is actually the prototype of ISIS. But I could also see his point about how she was, how Mary is the Christian equivalent of ISIS.
Well, she is.
Also, them having the same type of characteristics and the same type of goals.
Right. She subsumed many of the functions of ISIS and the whole cult of ISIS into the Catholic belief system, because they found that when they tried eliminating the cult of ISIS, it caused difficulties for the people who were worshiping as Catholics. They needed that feminine divine back in there in order to be able to function as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one thing that we find in the Fellowship of ISIS is so important, is that resurrecting that sense of the feminine divine and all that it can do is a very healing thing for the people who are involved with it. It helps to heal over the scars of a top-down, forced, patriarchal sort of background for many people. And that's not to say that having a sense of a Father God is forbidden or undesirable, but what we seek is a balance between the male and the female rather than one being over the other. And I think that's an important concept to emphasize as well, if that makes sense.
That makes sense to me.
I wanted to ask you specifically, Michael, about, and I don't know if you and Kevin had covered this already. I just kind of stormed in here about ISIS of the Stars, your particular
mm-hmm.
group, and how maybe that speciality differs, say, from the Fellowship of ISIS as a whole.
Okay, well, within the Fellowship of ISIS, we have an organization called the College of ISIS, and the College of ISIS is groups of people who are drawn to teach our liturgy that we have. We have a liturgy of mystery dramas that people can experience as a way to connect with the divine and with spirituality, to spiritual growth. ISIS of the Stars is one of the teaching centers that's part of the College of ISIS. And I work with many different people frequently by remote methods, because I live in the middle of nowhere. But I help people reach their spirituality and learn more about the gods and the goddesses through ISIS of the Stars. It came to have that name because I originally wanted to be an astronomer, and I spend a lot of time out working with the stars and starlight. And one of the things I do at ISIS Oasis is I do a star talk for everybody, where I talk about the visible constellations and planets that we have overhead, and kind of step people through what they're seeing outside at night and make them more aware of the universe around them. And that's part of where the idea of ISIS of the Stars came through, because she's goddess of everything, and that's just the aspect that spoke to me the strongest. But I used it as a teaching center and a temple. I have a building here on my property that I've turned into a temple and meditation center with different altars for gods and goddesses around the world, and then an inner sanctum that's devoted to Isis that I, you know, I use for ritual, and then I also open to show people when they want to come by and visit.
I think it was interesting when you mentioned that, just staring at the stars, because when I was a kid, I did my fair share of star and cloud staring, and still do sometimes. But what I used to do was, and I had a powerful interest in astronomy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what I used to do was do the thing where you would point a camera. I would take my father's camera out into the sky, and then if you leave the shutter open in the older cameras, it tracks the path of the stars at night.
Right, and you get that circular path around the sky. It was very fast.
So you would see it. Yeah, you would see the streams of light as they would travel. So that was something I used to do as a kid.
Right. Well, I used to do that, and I worked on becoming an astronomer until I was in college, and it was about that period of time that I actually got into the study of astrology because my instructors were dismissing astrology out of hand, and it struck me that they were repeating a prejudice that they had been given by their instructors and on back, but they hadn't actually dug into the subject to see whether there was any validity to it or not. And I've been an astrologer for, God, 35 years or more now. I find that there does seem to be relationship between the movement of the planets and what happens here on Earth. And even though I didn't end up going into astronomy, there's a connection back to the astronomy as well. I just resonate with the stars very strongly.
And what sign are you?
A Scorpio.
Oh, okay. We're a bunch of Aquariuses, a bunch of airy, dizzy Aquariuses over here.
Yeah,
but Janice?
Aquarians here.
Janice?
Well, that's okay. My dad was an Aquarian.
What date?
He was born on February 7th.
Okay. I have a brother that's
January 20th, and so is Brett Hillman is a January 20th. He's of the same day as I am.
That's pretty cool.
Hey, Brett, I didn't know you were Aquarian. Here we go.
Yep.
Boom.
Same birthday.
Well, I've got a birth coming up. My birthday is actually on Halloween.
Oh,
all right.
I'm in the right
place. My will be on Halloween, actually. I'll be 20 years old again, believe it or not. So, I heard or I read on Facebook that you just moved to San Francisco.
Oh, no. I used to live in San Francisco. I still live there.
I wish I lived nowhere now. What's the name of nowhere?
Bensmere, California.
Oh.
A
little bitty rural railroad town up in the Northern California, about 10 miles from Mount Shasta.
Okay. I know Mount Shasta.
Lots of like magical people in Northern California.
Yeah. I got a couple of tapes from
Liz.
Yes.
It's a great live, although, you know, it's the nearest city is like 65 miles from here, so it has a very different vibe to it than living in a place where there's a lot of heavy traffic. Traffic in Dunsmuir is two people stopped on the side of the road talking to each other out of their, you know, driver's side windows.
okay.
You know, I mean, there's...
You can have that here, but it's more like yelling obscenities, though, than actually talking.
That's two people that recognize each other and going, "Hi, how are you doing?"
Yes.
Yeah. That's a different small town.
Yes. Very different. Yes. Did you go into the priesthood with either Kevin or Brett before we came in?
Oh, I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, can you explain how one becomes a priest, or in my case, a priestess, which happened for me 2 years ago
basically,
in the fellowship of Isis?
Okay. Basically, it's a matter of someone feeling a call to become a servant of the goddess. being a priest or priestess in the Fellowship of Isis is very different than it is in most organized religions, because it's not about being a minister to people necessarily. It's more about being called literally to serve Isis in some way or form. And the part of my job as a person who's in the College of Isis and who teaches the mystery dramas is to help guide people who want to become priests and priestesses through the initiatory process to becoming ordained as actual ministers of, you know, goddesses. It's an interesting feeling when the gods call you to their service. It's not about ego. It's not about the idea of I want to be a priest or priestess. It's about accepting that there is a higher power that wants you to manifest for them something in the world. And I know priests and priestesses who are called to do all kinds of different work. Everything from healing to artwork to, I know one woman who was called to become a priestess of Isis to minister specifically to sacred snakes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all about what the goddess wants you to do. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. So your concentration was primarily on Isis? Because mine was between Bast, Isis, and Serevete.
Right. My three goddesses are all Egyptian. I mm-hmm. dedicated to Isis, Bast, and Nut. Nut is the sky goddess. I
yes.
work with her for wisdom.
Yes.
And my first reaction on being called to work with these gods was literally, oh no, not the Egyptians, they're too weird. But I've gotten used to them over the years, and I've gotten a much better sense of how they all work together than I did when I started out. I was thinking, oh, you know, I'm of Celtic background, I'm going to work with the Celts or the Norse gods or somebody like that, but no, it was the Egyptians that called me. So it can be a strange journey.
I always started with the Egyptians, but very early on, I had a likening to Thor. In fact, I still have a likening to Thor, but that's definitely Nordic. And, you know, when I lived in Baltimore, you know, they were like Thor.
Yeah.
But
well, I do a lot
Thor,
of work.
To me, it's just the European Shango, which is African Haitian.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I work with Odin a lot also, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
When a god looks at you and says, you, I want...
Yeah, hello.
You don't argue
with
me. You
can't hide.
No, you just
how you try. You can't hide.
Yeah. And as I said earlier about my temple, I have altars to the pantheons of many different groups of gods and goddesses, because I like to see who I'm working with. I sometimes laugh and say that the outer part of my temple is the UN for the gods, because they all like to talk to each other. And I work as a channel a lot of times, and I find myself sometimes in situations where I'm channeling back and forth for different groups of gods between each other. It gets a little strange.
Very cool.
But, it's what it is.
So you also are an Archdruid, and...
I'm in the Noble Order of Terra as well.
Yeah. Yes. So how do those...
Both of those groups are dedicated to working with the environment in different ways. The Druid clan of Dana is organized around the idea of interacting with the environment in a direct fashion, of being able to sense the environment and sense the magic that's moving through the environment. It has a lot of connection with the Druid movement that's going on, especially over in England right now. The Noble Order of Tyre, on the other hand, is specifically organized around protecting the environment and being specifically environmentally organized and working to improve the environment. So in their own ways, they're both environmental organizations. And it's not that being an archdruid or anything like that is somehow better than being a priest. It's simply a different aspect of service that I've been called to do. The gods use me in a lot of different ways, is what it comes down to.
Very good. And I know I met you through Fellowship of Isis Chicago.
Yeah.
So you're planning to go to the tribute
for
my teacher, a teacher for many years, Right Reverend
Dina Buddha.
Carterway Buddha.
I will be at the Goddess Festival in Chicago on the 5th. I'm participating the night before the Goddess Festival. They're having a special funeral ceremony for Dina, and I will be part of that. And then on the 5th, I will be at the Goddess Festival. It's in memorial to Dina. I'll be doing a reading of a poem that I have as my presentation, and then be participating in the Rite of Rebirth, which we're doing to celebrate Dina's passage across the veil.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff going on that's surrounding memorials to Dina this year at the Goddess Festival in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it. I'm trying to make it because we did. I did the funeral procession. I don't want to say the name, but I did it for my mother. About a month after she died, I had did the same ritual for my mother.
It's a very powerful experience. It helps the people who are left behind come to terms with the passage of the person who's passed in a very powerful way that I find to be very healing for a lot of people. It's one of our transitional rituals that I've written about on my blog.
Oh, I got to read that. Part of the Isis of the Stars?
Yeah, it's isisofthestars.blogspot.com, I think.
Okay.
And I can send you a link to it through Facebook.
Okay, cool.
So
let me ask you one more question, and I'll give it to other people. I don't want to hog the whole program. But we're talking about the mystery dramas. So can you explain the mystery dramas to somebody who doesn't know anything about them?
Well, the mystery dramas are designed to create a sacred altered space, a psychological space where people can interact with deity, with spirit world, with the larger reality around us that we don't normally get in contact with. So they're basically little plays that focus on one deity or one story out of mythology, and they work to create the space where in meditation you can have insight into something or a vision of deity or hear word from deity that tells you something about yourself that you didn't know or that you need to know. And they act as little initiations to put you into an inward focused state spiritually so that you can grow more strongly in your spiritual path. And that's what the mystery dramas are about. That's how they're designed. I mean, just on the surface of it, they look pretty simple. But once you get involved in enacting one and being part of one, they're actually extremely powerful.
Right. It's very different when you're involved, because I've been involved with, maybe 6 or 7 while I was alive. And That's how we actually met during one of the mystery dramas. So they look very simple. They read very simple. But once you start to really reenact one, you find out how simple it isn't. It's more complicated. It's more dramatic. It's definitely more powerful.
Well, it's about creating the vehicle that lets your mind go someplace you wouldn't normally go, and that's a very powerful psychological tool to developing one's spirituality, is being able to achieve that altered state. And the dramas are just one way of getting there.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it's really like a working meditation.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it creates a context that meditation occurs within.
Daniel?
I noticed in some of your literature and background, it said that you were the first, I believe, if I remember this correctly, the first Fellowship of Isis website was started by you?
Yes, it was.
1994?
1994. I had asked Lady Olivia if it was all right if I put up a page for the Fellowship of Isis on the computer, because I spent 15 years as a computer programmer and software in those cubicles that you were deriding a while back. And I had the computer skills to put up a page for the Fellowship of Isis, and a lot of people saw my page and joined the group through that.
In 1994, somebody might have went, what's a computer? What's that? What's a web page?
yeah. But, you know, back then, I was working in computers and knew how to put together a web page. And I have to admit, it was fairly primitive. All of the artwork was drawn pixel by pixel, because there wasn't really a paint program anywhere or anything like that.
You took some time then on that, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a challenge.
And I also noticed a mentioning of in the same article that I read. It was funny how, you know, how when you mention something and then it comes back and somebody else mentions it and somebody else mentions it. For another show, I brought up an Akkadian goddess that maybe some people have forgotten about, a primordial Tiamat. And I noticed there was some mention of Tiamat, the dragon diagram. It was in that same article I remember reading about.
Right.
And I thought Tiamat was an interesting primordial deity from the Akkadian text. That fits into so many of the other stories about originally there was kind of a female primordial that combined things, and then it kind of was a dissension into something else. She combined salt and water, I've heard, in another one to create life.
Right.
So I think bringing up Tiamat was an interesting, sometimes forgotten, you know, primordial goddess.
Well, that's one of the things that we do, is we try to get back in touch with those faces of the goddess that have been active in the past, and, you know, some that are active presently, because we know, for example, in Japan there are goddesses that are very powerful that are very active, or in Hinduism, for example. But we do go back and look at the different pantheons and the different goddesses, because they all reflect different aspects of deity. One of the things that we've kind of gotten conditioned in our modern culture away from is this idea that the gods are vehicles through which we see different aspects of reality. We've gotten this idea that God created man in his image, whereas the real truth is we created the gods in our image. And they're focuses through which we see the larger reality of deity. I think Tiamat is a powerful goddess. And one of the ways that we work with her in the FOI is we have a central meditative symbol that we use that has the coils of Tiamat superimposed on the coils of the Tiamat is the eight-pointed star of Ishtar. and it forms a series of individual points that the mystery dramas are connected to. So they actually work, we work around the spiral and through the rays of the star to find pathways into deity that work best for us psychologically.
And it's funny you mentioned the eight-pointed star, because I bought recently a necklace. I'm not wearing it now, but I've been wearing it a lot. And
mm-hmm.
it's actually, it's a captain's wheel, you know.
Yeah.
And I bought it for many symbolic reasons. First, there's eight, and there's 8 points, and there's all these different associated with that. I think it's even my numerological number for my name.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I just bought it for the symbolism of I'm the captain. I'm the one steering this ship and this little, you know, journey I'm going through in this incarnation.
Right.
Funny how things come up a lot when you start talking about them again, just like with the Tiamat thing. All of a sudden, I've started to hear Tiamat conversations all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And
that may mean that you're being called to Tiamat service, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the whole idea of priesthood comes from, is that deity starts becoming very much a part of your life, and, you know, tapping you on the shoulder, saying, hey, you look like a likely person to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Maybe it's Tiamat now. It was, well, for a long time for me, my main, or I guess you would say my goddess in the pantheon, my little eclectic pantheon, which is exactly what it is, was Kuan Yin, and has pretty much been for a pretty long time.
Huh?
I didn't do a lot of shopping, I guess, but I've always been attracted to the universal ones, like the ones that are kind of okay, like you're not offending somebody's tradition by... You know, like Lakshmi is a very open, you know, about sometimes associated with wealth. It actually means wealth of spiritual knowledge as well as, you know, giving of gifts and all sorts of different things. Interesting. And one thing I noticed about Lakshmi that I don't know if too many people commented on, but I noticed when I first started, you know, when you first call and you start researching something,
mm-hmm.
is her position she's sitting in is almost exactly identical to Baphomet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's like this direct, and some people think that the Baphomet image came from India, like so, like a lot of this stuff. And I remember discovering that a while back and going, huh, she's kind of sitting just like the old, you know, that classic Eliphas, Levi, Levi, or whatever, how you pronounce it, Baphomet symbol, and sitting there.
Yeah,
with the one.
There's a tremendous amount of synchronicity that goes on between the different groups. And, you know, you mentioned Eliphas Levi. And that would be, he was part of the Golden Dawn and the other groups that were
mm-hmm.
founded back around the beginning of the 20th century. And one thing that people don't realize about the Fellowship of Isis is that the founders of the Fellowship of Isis come from that tradition a lot more than they come from the neo-pagan tradition that fired up in the 70s itself. So there's elements of the old Golden Dawn and the Kabbalistic masters that were around at the turn of the century in the Fellowship of Isis that might not be obvious to most people.
Yeah, because sometimes, and believe me, I am fascinated by the mystics of that, even the ones that are lesser mystic than some, just like even some of the thinkers outside the box, religious.
Right.
In circles, there's something about that turn of the century time that pumped out some really interesting rebellious renegade or just fascinating occultists or just interesting mystics in whatever religious tradition figures.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
go ahead.
Well, Lady Olivia is one of them, and she's still around. She's 96 years old.
Yeah.
And that was going to be my next point was Lady Olivia. Who is about 96 now? Who you could say is of that generation, maybe towards the later half of it. But yes, and she was also, if I remember correctly, she was classically educated with like what they call like the true classical education, where you learn like the multiple languages, and you
right.
learn all the you know, much more intensive literary education and all of this.
Yeah, she has a very strong background in that, and her brother was even more so.
Yeah.
Lawrence had a lot of input into the mystery dramas because he did a lot of the research on the mythology and the stories and the actual background of the priesthood kind of as a counterpoint to Lady Olivia's more mystical focus. They both had that kind of training, and they both were really powerful with it. It was a very dynamic partnership while he was still alive.
And I'd also like to say that you mentioned Lady Olivia and those thinkers from the turn of the century. One, and this probably plays into the point you made about how Fellowship of Isis folks came from some of that, Golden Dawn and others, there were others. And what's interesting about that is the fact that though I love studying all of those mystics, and I think they're great, including Crowley, you know, you got to admit, he's kind of an interesting metaphysician, magician, and all of, you know, all the, Waite and, you know, the creators of the Rider-Waite tarot decks and all that. But they were all very male-dominated. It was still a little bit of a patriarchy in that mystical world. And, of course, Fellowship of Isis is very, more of a maternal organization, or at least a recognition of the balance that it must be or it should be recognized.
Right, exactly. Most people think Lady Olivia founded the organization kind of on herself, but the person who had the real insight of the need for the feminine divine being back in the world was Lawrence. Lord Lawrence was I guess he would have been an Anglican minister back in the 70s, and he broke from that to create the Fellowship of Isis because of that need to bring the feminine back into the world. And it just happens that he has this really mystical sister who's able to, you know, channel a lot of the energy into creating those mystery dramas that take people to all places that they need to go. But he was the one that came up with the idea of creating the Fellowship of Isis back in the 70s.
Because he was more of the logical / practical one.
Yeah.
And Lady Olivia was seen more as the goddess figure or the mystic figure or one with the creative imagination. Not saying that, you know, something's wrong.
Lawrence's writings have a lot more to do with analyzing the ancient world and the way that the gods and cataloging the gods and goddesses of the ancient world and exploring what it means to be a priest or a priestess in the ancient world. And you're right, he was much more the logical half of the two.
And it's an interesting thing because, and I'm not saying this in a judgmental fashion, but you can go by a quick Llewellyn book if you want to be a good neo-pagan and learn a bunch of stuff. I'm not having an opinion left, right, or sideways because everybody gets to start from something, and some of our early books aren't always the best. But also, just being an educated person can you could almost create your own amazing pagan tradition.
That's how
I view the Fellowship of Isis. They were just very educated people, determined to find and uncover and discover or rediscover the secrets of some of the lost divine feminine, almost forgotten if certain intellectuals hadn't sort of drummed them back up in the fashion they did. So in a way, it's just a good lesson to me to be a good pagan is to be, you don't have to be classically educated, but to be someone who thinks outside the box and to go and to find these truths in history or as much as that is truth is written in that history.
Right, and to recognize that the world is bigger than we like to think it is. We get so caught down in the mundane a lot of times that we forget that the world is you know, a much larger place than we allow ourselves to see it.
And not, I would say also, and not as new as we think it is. Sometimes when we discover these things, I'm like, wow, here's a quick way to a magical path. And it's like, but you know what? You could have done that in the 50s or 60s and gone out and bought a tarot deck and then, or whatever, or found. Now, it was harder back then to find.
Yeah, it was a lot harder back then, but it still was there, you know.
It was still there. Or it was there just in history books. You could piece it together if you had a really good education or study the Greek or Egyptian, past or something like that. So it is interesting how things evolve. Now you can get a really quick kind of sort of metaphysical education, which I think is good. I like access because even if it's there, so many people aren't even going to look at it anyway. So that's how I look at it. So some people are like, oh, it's too open now. I'm like, well, it's like anything. You can go buy a book on being an auto mechanic. Is everybody going to go be an auto mechanic?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah,
right. Well, and the other thing about it is it's good that it is open because more people are finding their place in spiritual world than we used to allow people to do.
I agree with that.
The biggest problem is that it doesn't have any guidance or focus, really, and people can get lost in the weeds.
Right. No, I exactly what you mean. They can get lost in just maybe silly information or information that comes from someone who maybe doesn't have the purest interest in mind and might.
Or they may think that being a pagan or a Wiccan or whatever means casting spells and celebrating the moons and the sun points in the year. And it's, you know, that's a starting point, but there's also a much deeper layer to it that they may not get access to if they just go for the quick stuff in the books.
Or
the party, because, I'm not going to smack myself in the hand, but I know when I first started, it was just like, I'm going to this ritual or I'm going to that ritual. And it was very much a party atmosphere when I started in the 90s.
Trust me.
Yeah. Trust me.
Kind of a sex party all
night. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But as you get older and hopefully grow up, there's still some people, kind of challenged on that. But as you get older and wiser and life gets in your way, hopefully you'll find more of a mystical calling, especially when you've been chosen by a particular goddess or a particular god or Loa or Orisha or entity or whoever chooses you, and you kind of take the stand with them and have them guide you and have you guide them as well, then it becomes a lot less party and a more like duty and more like a understanding.
Well, that's not to say that the partying isn't there. I mean, we can still enjoy partying and still be the goddess. It's just, it's not the end all and be all of what we are doing.
It's the compliment, not the event itself.
Yeah.
That's what I say about music, because I'm a musician in a band. And I always say, I'm the kind of guy, I will, have a drink and relax and chill and all of that. I'm like, but when you're trying to get the band to be productive, that can't be the event. That can be, okay, we had a great band practice, and then we're having a beer afterwards and talking about our performance or whatever. And when it becomes the actual reason you're getting together, that's always what destroys the band. Everybody's just getting bombed out of their mind.
Exactly. There's a time and a place for getting bombed out of your mind, and there's a time and a place for getting, evoked out of your mind into another spiritual world.
Absolutely. I agree. I like the way you think.
Thank you.
It's true, though. Things in their place, and you definitely know when they're out of place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the
pagan community has practices that they do, smudging people with sage to get them ready for going into ritual. And it's actually gotten to where I've developed a reaction to the sage that when I breathe sage smoke, I just go into an altered state.
It is a trigger. I mean, Chris Penzack, who joined us before, he talks about things to trigger you into the meditative state. He even does like a technique for it. You do your your countdowns and all the things that you normally used to do. He says, or while you're in that deeply meditative state, develop a trigger. Now, it won't take you into the deep state, but it might take you into, like, kind of a light meditative state to, like,
maybe
do something.
They get you part of the way there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you kind of get, like, sort of there. It gets you in the mood. Like, maybe it's just a little hand gesture you come up with or something like that.
Music. I burn sage every day, so sage isn't a trigger. But music or clapping or just getting in a comfortable state. Like, I do yoga, so before I do a ritual or something, do a couple simple cat poses or cow poses or a course.
The sun salutation will put you into an altered state fairly fast.
Yes, very fast.
Yeah, the thing that's fun is it's so individual as to what will trigger you into the right state. And it doesn't have to be a drug or alcohol or anything like that. It can be, like I said, sage or just a piece of music that just happens to stir you in the right direction.
Certain types of music, I'm very audio-oriented and I'm a musician, so certain types of music will definitely do it. For me, just getting quiet, because I'm a very, if you know me, like right now I'm standing. I don't even sit down when I do my show because I'm
very hyper at times.
I'm very mobile. So to me, just dark room candle, and I can really get into a meditative state extremely quick in that. So I always tell people, I can meditate and get there, and anybody can, because I can be downright frazzled, sometimes, and kind of daydreamy and drifty and walking around, pacing. I'm a pacer. I pace around. So I would say, if I can do it, pretty much anybody can quiet their mind.
Yeah. The first thing, though, is they have to have the desire to do so.
Yeah.
That's true, too.
And that's part of what we teach as spiritual teachers, is that we need to take time to slow down. The world around us is insane because it's always moving at that constant faster, faster, faster space. And we teach that you need to stop and take a breath and stop and look around you and calm down, which is something people don't seem to get very often anymore.
That's very true. The stillness means a lot, and it helps so much, especially as the habit develops. Because then even if you're in situations that drive you crazy, like the one I was in with 3.5+ hours of traffic, it just wasn't moving, and that kind of thing just destroys me, because I do so many things. I'm starting a band, a voiceover business. I do multiple radio shows a week, setting up show pages, working, starting another business. I was doing electrical work today. Blah 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 blah. I'm not trying to dump on you here, Mike. I'm just saying. It's like when I feel like that time is being wasted, that's when I start going crazy. My mind just starts going, I can't believe I'm just sitting here.
And this is a time when you could actually roll the window down and feel the breeze on you and look at the world around you and enjoy the colors and the other aspects of what's going on around you and just use it as a meditative process.
That's right. It was definitely a missed opportunity.
I understand that. I've been in long commutes like that before, or stuck in traffic, and it's hard to do, but it's something that's possible.
I agree with you. And I can, but this show was pending, so I'm like, oh, I have a guest, and he's going to call. Janice is going to show up at my house. She was here. I wasn't here.
Daniel?
But I called Kevin, and luckily Kevin sat in. Came in and sat in. So
appreciated it.
So.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you talk about having so much stuff to do. Part of what happened with me in my service as a priest is that I had so many people coming to me for advice that I eventually decided that I'd better get some training as a psychologist so that I could at least give them, useful, accurate, sane, information and suggestions. So I'm in the process of working on my dissertation as a psychologist to get a doctorate.
Oh, awesome.
And I know what you mean about being, frantically busy doing a lot of stuff, because you know, a lot of my time is spent working on that dissertation.
And Selena Fox, who's going to be joining us in October 2nd,
October
I think.
October 2nd, yeah.
She's another high priestess.
Pagan,
and she is, too, a trained psychotherapist, I believe.
Yeah.
I've noticed quite a few of them are, so I guess it's a pattern. You become a pagan priest, and then you become a psychotherapist.
Well, you know, you don't want to give people advice that turns out to be bad advice for them psychologically, because the worst thing you would want is to damage somebody by the answers that you give them. So it's sort of... Hmm?
That is
so
true.
It's a big necessity in a way.
Yeah. Well, I have an associate degree in psychology, so I guess I have to beat myself up. Get a little higher. Get that bachelor then, you know, even
but at
more.
Least better than nothing.
What?
I said at least an associate degree is better than nothing.
Oh, yes.
I mean, my degrees were not in psychology. I have a bachelor's in physics and math and a master's in computer science. And, you know, that was just not preparation for being a priest.
Right.
No.
No, not a people job like that.
No.
And
yeah.
I'd like to go to a slightly more personal note here, I guess, or personal project note. I don't know if you and Kevin discussed any of that before we showed up, but... We are also aware that you're a writer and an artist, and I wonder if maybe you can talk about some of your artwork, because we definitely promote art here on Main Street Universe.
Well, a lot of my artwork is dedicated to manifesting spiritual visions that I've had. I've done artwork of the goddesses. I've done artwork of visions of people that I've had. I've done several of my interpretation of certain tarot cards that were very prominent in my life at various times. And I also do artwork just because it relaxes me and makes me feel good. So, you know, some of my stuff is landscape painting just because I happened to be in the place at the time and it felt like the right thing to do. It's a very spiritual act for me to create artwork. I find that I do arts, and I do a lot of crafting work, too. I knit and crochet a lot, and one of the things I like to do is take these old doily patterns that you've seen. You know, your grandma used to have doilies on the back of the chairs and stuff. But I take the patterns, and I do them in colors, and I do them for altar cloths for various altars for people. And to me, that's a very... spiritually creative act, because as I'm going through doing the pattern, I'm also concentrating on deity as I do it.
I am not particularly artistic in the physical sense. I mean, I'm a musician, so I'm artistic in that sense. But
mm-hmm.
I like to make a lot of my stuff when it involves any of my altar or ritual stuff. Like I made my own wand. All that kind of stuff. I just do. Other people's might be way prettier than mine because I'm not the best at it. But they're
creation
items. And, you know, I encourage people to support their vendors as well. But
mm-hmm. cause
sometimes you just run into something really cool. But I like to, if I can, like I have these wood chips and I make, you know, amulets with. And I just make this stuff myself, and it does really add something to it. It's like your little thing and your energy put into it. And
right, it's making something real, manifesting something that was inside of you in a way that nobody else can manifest. And you don't want to get down on yourself by saying that it's not the prettiest thing that you've ever seen or stuff like that. It doesn't
right.
matter. It's a creative act that you've gone through making it.
Yeah.
It's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like to write myself, and apparently I like to get interviews. So.
Yeah. Well, I had an interesting time with the first book that I wrote, which is a retelling of the stories of the Greek gods and goddesses in their own, you know, from their own points of view. So the idea would be, For example, you take the story of Demeter and Persephone. Well, Demeter tells the story from her point of view, and then Hades tells the story from his point of view, and then Persephone tells the story from her point of view, and it all kind of works out that way for the different gods and goddesses. It was a very powerful experience because I would read up on the myths and get the data in the back part of my brain and then go into trance and let the god or goddess write whatever they wanted to write.
Okay.
And it was a pretty intense book, but it came out very well. And I did a lot of artwork for that, too.
What's the book called?
The book's called Mythic Voices, and it's available through Lulu.
Oh, that sounds like it'd be a nice movie. I could definitely see that as a movie. It's like now you'd see it like the story from this person, the same story, right? And from all these different perceptions, I think would make a pretty cool film.
Right, and it, you know, I had a lot of interesting insights. Like, you know, you have the three fates in Greek culture that they have. They spin the thread, and they measure the thread, and they cut the thread. And I had the insight, well, what in the heck happens to the thread after it's been cut? And they pass to Athena, who weaves it into the tapestry of time.
Oh, nice.
And, I mean, you know, she's the one, the weaver goddess, who takes everything and makes the big creation out of it that represents the whole of experience. And those threads have to go somewhere, so it made sense that they ended up in a big tapestry. I kind of like the idea of my thread ending up in the story as part of the story. It's kind of a neat idea.
Right.
That came to me in one of the trances that I was working on. So you never know what is going to come up when you let your spirit loose and let it, you know, do its thing.
Very much so. I have a question. Well, I want to go back to Lady Olivia. I know today in one of the Facebook sites, Caroline Wise had sent out a request that we would say some kind of message to her. So is she ill again, or did she fall recently?
She broke her ankle. And is in the hospital recovering from an ankle break. I mean, at 96 years old, that is not something you want to do.
No.
And so she's been cooped up in the hospital facility for a couple of months. And what Carolyn was doing was encouraging members of the fellowship to write to Lady Olivia, you know, because she enjoys having letters from people. And that's one of the ways she stays in contact with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she liked it a lot. All of D.C., because I was trying to get her to come to D.C.
Yeah, well, she's not up to traveling, right?
Yes.
Maybe to Cafe Fairfax.
Yeah.
That's what we call our studio here, by the way, in case you're wondering. We're in a music studio my brother and I built, and it's called Cafe. We're in Fairfax, Virginia, and we call it Cafe Fairfax. So.
More cats, the merrier.
Very much so.
I have six.
Do you
have
any questions for Michael?
What?
Do you have any questions for Michael?
Oh.
No? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was laughing. I have six cats. I figure I'm a priest of Bast, and I know where my place is in life. You want to talk about service to the goddess?
Hello.
We had that growing up. We had about usually between 5 or 7 or 8, and then some of them would have kittens because it was the 70s when people still had kittens and kept them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there might be a house full of them, and then eventually we'd give them away. And so we usually had a lot of cats running, and I always loved cats.
Mm-hmm.
I never, you know, this is funny, and this is really true, and people don't, they look at me funny when I say this, because I'm in a very masculine world as a construction worker. And and there's that weird thing about how being a man, you're not supposed to like cats. And I never knew that as a kid. Yeah, I never knew that as a kid. As a kid, I actually, in some ways, saw it as a very masculine animal because it hunted. It kind of was like, it was like this kind of lone, you know, with guards because we were outdoors and, you know, don't mess with me or you'll get the claw kind of thing. So I never thought, I'm like, where does this idea of this, now, I do understand that people think they sort of have an intuitive feminine sense about them and all of that, and the fickleness maybe even. But Janice just stared at me. She stared at me for a minute.
Necessarily a feminine quality, though. You know?
But it was just, I saw them as a really cool, interesting, even somewhat, you know, masculine animal as a kid, you know, being the great hunters and all that. I don't know if that necessarily is the difference between male and female, but I kind of learned later that it was considered not a cool pet for guys.
Well,
and I remember thinking, that's ridiculous.
More and more men are having cats as pets, so finding them a lot easier to deal with than having to go and walk the dog all the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs have their place.
Yeah, the dog, I love dogs, but they're neat. It's like having a child, you know?
I had a dog before.
Yeah.
And a kitten is like also having a child, but, you know, or a baby, then they grow up and then they start treating you like a teenager. So that's what I see with cats.
Dogs have owners, cats have staff.
Hello.
Or the one I heard was a dog worships you like a god, and
the cat knows that the cat is god.
Yeah. If I had a kid when I lived in Baltimore, and when it got older, the place that I lived at, the condos I lived at, was like, well, we can't have cats, so I had to get rid of her, which I hated. But when I met David, he had like 3 cats at one time, and,
mm-hmm.
and all older cats. And he was mm-hmm. like, well, yeah, people think that, you know, I'm a guy, I should have a dog, and, you know, but
I never understood it. Never
dogs
understood
are high maintenance, and they are. They're extremely high maintenance, actually. But,
And when I kind of grew up in I grew up kind of, it was really country when I first got there, so there wasn't as much influence, and it was more suburban, and I don't remember any of it until I got older and became an adult male, and people were like, a cat, what are you doing, dude with a cat? It's like, dude, not a real dude, you know, it was just, I was like, what are you talking about? Anyway, enough of that.
Well, I'm an unashamed cat lover.
Exactly.
Yep. So, do you guys have any more questions for me?
Well, yeah, we are kind of wrapping up here. We actually went over our time a little bit, but that's because I got here late, and
mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, we were kind of in. It was just starting. The ball was starting to get rolling, so I didn't want to interfere and be like, "All right, Mike, what?" You know, I didn't want to do that. So, anyway, I guess I'll just say, is there anything you'd like to plug or anything you'd like to share? Maybe something new you're working on.
Well, the big things are just the 2 goddess festivals that are coming up that are the one in Chicago that's on the 5th of October. That's a memorial to Archpriestess Dina Buddha, who just died this last year. And then the goddess Isis Oasis Convocation in California is the following weekend, is Veterans Day weekend, and there's going to be a big gathering there. Those 2 things are coming up very soon, and they're going to be absolutely phenomenal people to attend and enjoy and get to meet other people in the fellowship and celebrate ritual together and just have a wonderful time. So those are my main plugs that I wanted to get in.
Yes. I have yet to go to Isis Oasis, but, you know, like I said, we met each other in Chicago.
Yeah.
Travel more for the fellowship in Chicago than I have anywhere else.
Well, I enjoy the people in Chicago want me to come, so I'm real excited to get there and do that because, you know, I've been there several times now, and it's kind of a nice experience to go to a festival where people are real excited about you being there.
Yes,
and I'm
That's
looking
my
forward
home
to
base, actually.
Huh?
That's my home base, FOI Chicago.
Ah.
All right, Michael. I want to
thank you
very much for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much, Michael.
A marvelous time.
Yeah.
And
we'll have
to
have you
sometime.
Absolutely. And maybe I'll see you around. I haven't been to as many of all these festivals and everything that Janice has been, like all of them. But,
we keep inviting you to one in Michigan, Daniel.
Big guest we have in person. I hear you, Kevin.
That was me. We keep inviting you to one in Michigan, Daniel.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Convocation.
I have yet to go to Michigan, Brett.
Everywhere.
Oh, that's why.
It's worth it.
Normally food in Michigan in February.
Mm-hmm. Ah, but you get such experience with those snow goddesses.
Oh, yes.
Right. It is, you know, the wisdom of the crone.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, folks, I'm going to be playing some music. I'm going to be uploading some more as we keep recording. I just want to get that out there. I'm still working on the album. And I want to thank you very much, Michael Starsheen, for joining us this evening. Sorry for the craziness and some of the anarchy in the beginning, or at least that's how it felt to me. It might not have felt that much.
That's okay.
And I do want to let Kevin know that I do have control of the studio page again, so I can go ahead and press the closing songs and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for helping us out earlier today.
Yes, thank you very much,
problem.
Kevin.
Okay. Yep, no problem.
Here.
And I want to remind everyone that they're listening to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined.
And I can imagine a lot.
And I can imagine a lot. Thank you and have a great evening.
Thank you so much.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.